Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Some of the main focus of this show today, folks, is are we about to see another round of cuts in the WWE roster? Recently, a couple days ago, the WWE did let go yet one more person. It was actually from creative, a female worker in creative department. And while there may be some more backstage cuts still coming, we cannot rule out that another round of actual roster cuts will be coming too. Remember, WrestleMania, post-WrestleMania, usually brings roster cuts. Now, there have been so many up to this point that some people are saying, well, they did their post-WrestleMania roster cuts before WrestleMania. But I have a feeling that we're going to see a considerable amount more. I don't know what the end game is here, but I have a feeling we're going to see a considerable amount more. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this week's SmackDown. And we're going to start with something from SmackDown that everyone's written to me about, and that is Roman Reigns hinting that he may be leaving WWE sooner rather than later, was his exact words. Well, I wouldn't put too much stock into this right now. I know that Roman Reigns has said he wants to potentially pursue an acting career and potentially filter his way out of the WWE because, as he puts it, you can only be fall down for so long. And, of course, you know, he had some health issues and he probably doesn't want to put a tremendous amount of stress on his body. However, I don't think that's happening anytime soon. I think that is basically just Roman Reigns stirring up a little controversy for himself. I don't think he's going anywhere for at least 3 or 4 more years. And even if he did, I think the WWE would let him out to do movies and then re-promote him and pay-per-views here and there. I don't think they would just absolutely dismiss him totally. So I'm not really sure, you know, what there is to panic about here. I've heard a lot of people say if Reigns walks tomorrow, they have nobody. Well, yeah, you're right. They don't. But he's not walking tomorrow. And I think saying that again was just a little bit to troll people, to get people talking, to get people mentioning his name, to get his name trending on Twitter, whatever it happens to be. He's very smart about the self-promotion. Now, will he eventually follow The Rock's footsteps? I think he's going to try. Now, of course, the question is, could he really do it? Well, the WWE could certainly offer him some movie roles. And I'm sure that that's what they'll do in an effort to satiate that acting bug. He said himself, you know, I have to test the waters, see what I can do, get some experience in it. Well, that would be the way to get experience in it. Tomorrow, he's not going to get signed to a major contract by a major studio to do movies. That's not happening. That didn't happen with The Rock. It's not going to happen with him. So it'll take a little time for Roman Reigns to establish himself, but I think that eventually he'll phase himself out. Yeah, Mike, I think that's what his ultimate plan is to slowly phase himself out and perhaps get some experience and then go to maybe acting.
Right. Think about it this way. I'm looking at his age right now. He's 36 years old, right? And he's still got probably 3 or 4 more good years left in him. Now, granted, he's had his health problems and all this stuff, but who's to say the cancer doesn't come back again, right? And maybe that's what's in the back of his mind, that at some point the cancer could come back again. But we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that when that comes. So, and like you said, on Friday or Tuesday or whatever, if The Rock says, I want Roman in one of my movies, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, think about it. And look, I'm looking at Roman right now, and Roman kind of has the feel of Jason Momoa.
Right.
Who just played Aquaman. He could play a role like that, you know.
Well, you know, the real question is, can he handle it as far as, you know, there's been a big controversy on Roman Reigns that some people said, oh, he's terrible on the mic. He doesn't have a ton of charisma. You know, that's changed in recent times to people saying, oh, he's doing a good job as this character. He's doing a good job as the head of the table type character. Well, see, there was a very different situation with The Rock. Everyone said, oh, The Rock has all the charisma in the world. You know, he captivates audience no matter what he does, good guy, bad guy, whatever role he takes. Audiences is right there on, you know, he's got them in the palm of his hand. I don't know as Roman Reigns has that. I don't know. See, that's something you're going to have to find out. Because let's face it, The Miz has done movies. Randy Orton did movies. Even to a lesser extent, Dean Ambrose, Moxley did movies. Didn't get him anywhere. It's not like they pursued a major career in it or anything. We've even seen Morrison. John Morrison did several movies. Wade Barrett did several movies. By the way, if you haven't seen any Wade Barrett movies, Wade Barrett's better than you might think. Now, the only movies I've seen him in, he's played an action sort of hero guy, but he's very good. Wade Barrett actually potentially could have a career in that if he just wants to stick to that genre. Now, I don't know. These are not major movies that Wade Barrett put out. These are basically direct-to-DVD movies, but still, you know. We'll see if Roman Reigns has that ability. But, Church, I don't think just because he came on here and said he was leaving maybe sooner than later, that actually means very soon at all.
Yeah, I don't think he's – like, I don't think he'll leave before WrestleMania this year. Maybe in, like, what, 3-4 years? But also, circling back to The Rock and how he has everybody eating out of the palm of his hand. Do we forget the Die Rocky Die chant?
Yeah, at the beginning.
Ran throughout the arena when he, yeah, it's the very beginning when nobody liked him.
Nobody liked him and it was real. But you see, that church goes to my other point, which is in the current WWE, there would have been no Rock. Because they would have taken that and said, you don't have it. You can't get over. You're gone. They let him reinvent himself. Helped him to reinvent himself. And look what they caught in a bottle. They caught lightning in a bottle. The Rock is now the top paid actor in Hollywood. That's unbelievable. All from a guy who was getting booed out of the arena because he really had go-away heat. They did not like him at all. Now, this is what the WWE, and I'm glad you brought that up because this is the basis of our show today, is how the WWE finds these people disposable now. In this current era, he would have been disposable. You probably wouldn't have had Steve Austin either because they would have said, well, okay, we tried the ringmaster. You suck at it. Next guy, and you would have had no Stone Cold. That's very troubling because how many major superstars are the WWE throwing away? How many people that could have brought them major success are the WWE throwing away? But currently, Todd, I think Roman Reigns is going to stick around for probably 3 more years minimum.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with Roman Reigns wanting to take time off. And like you said, he might stick around for like two, three, or four years. See where this goes.
I don't think he's going anywhere right away. And again, you can't predict your success in Hollywood. You can't say, well, I'm just going to go be an actor. What happens if your film's bomb? I mean, The Rock tried it, and he caught lightning in a bottle. He succeeded in his first couple of films. He got some real critical acclaim. He went through a period then when he did, like, Doom and a couple other ones where they panned him, but he was able to bounce back. He was able to bounce back and get some quality roles and quality films, and he rose to the occasion, and they said, this guy's a legitimate box office. It doesn't really matter if he's the best actor in Hollywood. When his name is on the bill, people go see the movie, and that's the main thing. If you put The Rock as your lead or co-lead role in a movie, he has a built-in audience that's going to come see him. And that's gold. In Hollywood, that's gold. And he's had that last for a long time. You know, some actors are hot for like a year, and then boom, you never hear from them again. The Rock's had this a long time. So you have to say he's legit. Now, can Roman Reigns be that legit? I don't know. I'm going to say I have my doubts. I don't see The Rock in Roman Reigns, put it that way. I don't see the same type of person. But could he be someone who could make a living in Hollywood? Probably could, because even if he did minor roles where he was the heavy or he was a bodyguard or he was this or he was that, he doesn't have to be the lead guy. You know, some of these guys in Hollywood that are third and fourth bananas, they still make big, big money. Big money. So, yeah, it's very possible. And I know he has the acting bug after doing the Fast and Furious. Yeah, he did. Or is that what it was? Or Hobbs and Shaw, whatever it was, with The Rock. He caught that bug. So we'll see what happens with that. Before we get to who may be released in the upcoming months, and I got a good call with the names, let's get to a little bit of SmackDown, because I am so aggravated with SmackDown that I almost turned it off. I was very happy to see Ridge Holland make his debut. This is a screaming about this for I don't know how long on this show. You need to find a guy that even guys that are of decent size and can fight, you would say, I really don't want to fight that guy. I think that would be a bad time. That's a guy in a bar that you stay away from because, you know, he'll probably dust you. That's Ridge Holland. You have a guy now that looks like he could kick your ass. Sounds like he could kick your ass. Fights like he could kick your ass. He makes his in-ring debut and he loses. I don't care if it's to Cesaro. Cesaro, you have done nothing with. Absolutely nothing. This is the equivalent of Karrion Kross losing to Jeff Hardy. It may even be worse. Because Jeff Hardy, you said, well, he's held belts. He's been a legend for a long time. Cesaro's had a tag team belt, and he's not really, he's greatly underutilized. And he's a far better wrestler than Ridge Holland. But you're not using him. You're not booking him to be that tough of a guy. You're not booking him to be a top. You had weeks of Ridge Holland. And then Sheamus said, I wouldn't mind managing him. I'm saying, God bless the WWE. They're going to let Sheamus sort of ease out of the ring because of his injuries. He's going to take a managerial role. He's going to manage maybe Ridge Holland and maybe a couple other, you know, English or Irish wrestlers. Have a little, well, that would be cool. That would be great, and Sheamus deserves that. Very first match for Ridge Holland, he loses. Mike, I was screaming at the TV set. I can't believe they made this mistake again.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'll put it to you this way. When they first put APA together, all right, and when Sheamus first showed up, all right, you looked at APA, you looked at JBL and Farouk, and you said, okay, those are two guys I do not want to meet in a dark alley. I do not want to meet in a bar. You looked at when Sheamus first showed up, and what was his gimmick? I'm just an Irishman, and I love to fight, right? And yep. You looked at him, and he's a big raw-boned 6'5", whatever he is, 260-pound guy. And you said, this is a guy I do not want to get caught in a bar with, you know?
Right.
That's Ridge Holland. Ridge Holland now, it should be like Sheamus of 10, 12, 15 years ago, you know? That's what he should be, and they ruined him.
They absolutely 100% ruined his debut. If you're going to book a Ridge Holland debut with Sheamus, his manager, I would have minded Cesaro. See, you've done it exactly the opposite. Ridge Holland got all of the offense for 5 minutes, and then gets wrapped up for a 1-2-3. That's exactly the opposite of what it should have been. Cesaro should have gave Ridge Holland fits for a minute or two, maybe 3 minutes, where you're saying, you know, your guy's not looking too good there, Sheamus. Cesaro's all over him. And then he just takes control and finishes him off in a grand manner that you say, holy crap, that guy laid it to him. He really laid it to Cesaro. That's impressive. He took all of what Cesaro had to offer and then just laid it to him. This is not going to be an easy guy to beat. This is going to be somebody you're going to have to watch for. Nope, didn't do that. Did exactly the opposite. Oh, he blew his load in 3 minutes, and then he got wrapped up by a little small package. It's just terrible. I mean, where do you go with Ridge Holland from here, Church? This is a guy they could have ran with and made a tough dude, and now he looks like a simp.
Yeah, he could have easily been another Sheamus. Hell, actually, no. Let me rephrase it. He could have easily been what Drew McIntyre was supposed to be when
right.
he first debuted.
Yeah, that would have been good. I mean, look, this is a dude. He's a big rugged. I guess he's a rugby player, so he's got some legitimacy as far as, you know, rugby is a tough sport. I just don't understand what the WWE is doing. I can't figure out for the life of me why they take a person, they tell the public he's coming soon, he's coming soon. Here he's going to debut, and then he loses. And you say, when did the WWE ever do that? When did the WWE ever say, oh, we're shooting all these vignettes on Ludwig Borger, he's coming soon, then he gets wrapped up his debut. Razor Ramon, coming soon, wrapped up in his debut. When have we ever seen this? We haven't. So why in the name of the blue hell are you doing this now? Who is in charge of this booking, and what the hell are you thinking about? Because all you're doing is destroying characters. I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to have a rematch, and he's going to win. And then they're going to say, well, see, he did win. Don't get your panties in a bunch. Yeah, but this 50-50 booking is killing you. And let me explain to people, because I've had people write to me, say, well, 50-50 booking has always been around. When we say 50-50 booking, we do not mean Shawn Michaels takes on Triple H, and half the time Shawn Michaels wins, and half the time Triple H wins in their year-long feud. That's perfectly acceptable. As a matter of fact, I like that kind of 50-50 booking, because it shows neither one of these guys are really better than the other. On any given night, both of these guys are top, top, top draw guys, and one can beat the other. But what you don't do is make every wrestler on the roster 50-50. In other words, you don't say, well, Ridge Holland is going to go one-on-one with Brock Lesnar, and they're going to go 50-50. Or Cesaro is going to go one-on-one with Roman Reigns, and they're 50-50. You don't do that. And there's a reason you don't do that. The reason you don't do that is because you want to build these guys up until they hit their plateau. Once they hit their plateau and you say, this is probably about as far as this guy's going to go, then the guys that you're feuding with on that plateau, you can go 50-50 with lower mid-carders, and expect people to think, well, then they're going to be 50-50 with the top draws. That's not the way it works. Yeah, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs go 50-50 for their whole career. That's fine. But they didn't lose to tag teams that were jobbers 50-50. That tends to be what's happening. You can say whatever you want about Cesaro. There's no bigger Cesaro fan than me. I've screamed at the top of my lungs I wanted Cesaro to have major belts, to have a major push. They're not doing it. He is not looking like he's someone they got any confidence in, and yet you're going to let him beat him. That does not make sense. My personal opinion, Cesaro should be a top guy. He should be in the main events, but you're not doing that with him. So if you're not doing that with him, do not allow him to squash your new talent coming in. If you're going to use him as they used to refer to as a carpenter, which is somebody who builds up talent as they come in, then why in the world would you let Cesaro get over? What's your big plan for Cesaro? You got a big, huge plan that involves giving him a push? No. No, you don't. So theoretically, Rich Holland should have went in there and really smashed the hell out of Cesaro. Give Cesaro some offense, yes. But in the end, Rich Holland has to look dominant so Sheamus can say, you see, what did I tell you? With my guidance and his toughness, sky's the limit. And we would have said, well, Jesus, maybe it is. I mean, that's Cesaro he just squashed. He didn't touch some local talent. No, you can't do that. Todd, they do this time and time again, and it's so aggravating, it's almost impossible to watch.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said, now they got like the guys who've been there for a while as big stars like Cesaro getting squashed as a jobber for the last couple months or last year or so. Nakamura, too, as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a belt, but he never defends it. And when he does defend it, he's not defending it. He's losing constantly. It's it's very aggravating. I don't understand philosophy behind what they do anymore. I wish I did. You know, it's just the 50-50 booking. They think, well, if on any given night anybody can beat anybody, you'll be more interested in our matches. No, you're wrong. You're absolutely 100% wrong. We had on SmackDown Drew McIntyre and Jeff Hardy defeat Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. There's another huge mistake. You don't want Drew McIntyre losing. I get it. You're doing some kind of thing where Drew McIntyre has suddenly came under the attention of the authority figures now, and they don't like him for some bizarre reason. We haven't been given any reason, but now they're going to treat him unequally and unfairly. But Jeff Hardy has to drop that match. Jeff Hardy has to drop that match because then when he says, why in the hell am I not in the Battle Royal? They could say, well, you lost your match tonight. Now, he could rightfully say, well, I didn't lose it. Oh, well, you know, it won in the same. We can't have somebody who dropped a match tonight in on it. Even though Jeff Hardy was in on it, right? Whatever it happened to be, but Jeff Hardy has to lose that match. If you're going to make Corbin and Moss a team, you're sure as hell not making McIntyre and Hardy a team. So why in the world would you take a team that you probably are going to make a tag team and have them legitimately lose to guys that you have no interest in making a tag team, Mike? It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And think about this. You know, Drew McIntyre, and you remember who gave him that sword? Who gave him the sword? No.
Well, Sheamus, yeah.
I thought Sheamus.
Well, Sheamus handed it to him again, but his mom, it was supposedly ancestral, but Sheamus found it, yeah.
Right. Sheamus found it and gave it to him. I thought they were going to make more of that kind of tie between Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. And it would have made sense, you know, because Drew McIntyre is another one of those guys. Right. Drew McIntyre is another one of those guys, if he's handled right, that you would say, if I'm in a back alley, I don't want to meet up with Drew McIntyre.
Right, and you have a great thing. I thought it was such a good gimmick, one of the few good gimmicks that WWE had, that Sheamus and Drew McIntyre would fight to the death and then 5 minutes later say, let's go out for a beer, because that's just the way they were. Because I got news for you. I'm Irish. Now, I know Drew McIntyre's Scottish, but Sheamus is Irish, and I know people like that. Growing up, I know people like that. They would have a knockdown drag out and then say, okay, well, let's go get a beer. And I got a newsflash. They'd fight again, and they'd fight again, but let somebody else touch them. Let somebody else threaten them and see what happens. That was just a normal relationship in Irish families growing up with your friends and with relatives. You know, we can fight. We're like brothers, but don't you touch them. And I thought, Jesus, this is going to work out pretty good. it's kind of fun to see these guys literally going at each other, and then 2 minutes later, they're like, yeah, well, let's go to the bar. And God forbid somebody else does something to them. The other guy's right there. And you blew that. You even blew that. But, Church, there is no way you take Drew McIntyre, Jeff Hardy, form them into a team for one night, and let them pretty much squash guys that I guess they want to make a permanent team.
See, Jeff Hardy probably called an audible in the ring, and they went with, and they made it, you're right, Jeff should have lost that match, but they probably changed it last second, like, nah, Hardy's winning.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Jeff Hardy has that ability in the WWE. I think he'd been fired on the spot. I think they knew exactly what was going to happen, and they just don't care. See, this is the thing. The WWE does not care. In their twisted mind, they still, we can't have McIntyre lose this match because later we're going to have them keep him out of the Battle Royal, and there's no good reason for it. And the story's supposed to be they're picking on Drew McIntyre. Okay, but then please tell me this. Why? Why? There's no why. There's no reason. There's not a reason in the world. There's still not a reason in the world that Sonya Deville's picking on Naomi. Not a reason in the world we were given. Not a reason in the world. Supposed to go with it and say, okay, I guess they hate Drew McIntyre now. Why? What the hell did he do? If you're the general manager or you're the authority figures on SmackDown, you'd be like, man, McIntyre's here. Great. We can put him up against Roman Reigns. We'll have such a great fight. We'll have a great build, a great main event. No. Instead, you're going to put tag teams in the ring of who's going to fight Roman Reigns next. You would never do that in a bazillion years. You would never do it in a bazillion years. Now, if you're going to tell me, well, they're protecting Roman Reigns, it's all a part of his family, then you've went too far. Because the dynamic of Roman Reigns protecting his own self, the powers that be trying to play fair with him, and him having a little bit of politics and political, you know, muscle, it's fine. But if you're telling me, oh, they're in the bag for him too, well, then I don't know. Then I don't know. Then you've ruined the whole thing. What, are they family too? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, Todd. There's no reason in the world why Drew McIntyre would be kept away from Roman Reigns. That would be the thing that they would be trying to get to happen, you'd think, if they were really the, running SmackDown backstage. Unless you're trying to say they're afraid of Roman Reigns. If they're doing that, then they're not showing that because they're acting like smug about it, like they want to do it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, back then when Stone Cold Steve Austin and the McMahon feud happened, McMahon showed a lot of behind when they had his authority thingy going on.
Yeah, I mean, look. They promised us no authority figures, Mike. And now we're going right back to that era where people are being kept down and oppressed.
Right. Now, granted, I mean, look, I don't want to say they lucked into it, but we know, we kind of figure out where this whole Naomi thing is going, you know. But they kind of sort of lucked into that because the whole Bloodline thing is going so well. And, well, you're holding her down, and she's on this show, and so is her husband, and so is her cousin by marriage, and her brother-in-law. They're all there, and she's there, and you're holding her down, and all it's going to take is for her to acknowledge him as the head of the table and all that stuff, and it's going to start to get better for her, right? So they kind of lucked into it. I mean,
but you know, Mike, they've even blown that, Mike, and I'll tell you why they've blown it. They've blown it because if the authorities working for Roman Reigns to keep Drew McIntyre away from Roman Reigns, why in the world would they be punishing Naomi, who's a part of the Bloodline? they'd be doing just the opposite. They'd be kissing her ass. So they've got this whole thing completely ass backwards. They have no idea where it's going. Here is the problem with the WWE writers. They come up with an idea. How about Drew McIntyre runs afoul of the authority figures and they hold him back and try to suppress him? Okay. And nobody says, yeah, but are we going to flesh out why? Is he going to do something they don't like? Is something going to happen? We got to give a reason, right? No, we'll just do it and we'll think of it as it comes along. And then after weeks and weeks and weeks, you can see it with Naomi and Sonya Deville. They said, let's make Sonya Deville anti-Naomi. Okay. Do we have a reason? No, we'll think of one. They can't think of one. So they just keep it going and going and going, and they give us no reason, no clue, no nothing, because they don't have one. They just wrote it and said that's where it's going to be, and we'll think of something later. Not what good writers do. Good writers say, where is the foundation for this? Why would Sonya be mad at him? What's the end game? She's mad at Naomi. She does not want Naomi to succeed. What is her rationale? What is her reasoning? Okay, that's her reason. Fine. Now, where does this lead? Step one, step two, step three. Where are we going with it? They don't do it. If tomorrow they said, we're going to do this angle where Sami Zayn is actually a good guy and he's a face, and it was true all the time that his documentary was right, that they were oppressing him, they're not going to give any reason. They're not going to give any reason at all for his behavior or what he did or anything. They're just going to say, that's the way it is now. That's the way it is. If tomorrow Baron Corbin went back to being Baron Corbin, the lone wolf, that's the way it is. There's no explanation ever given. They don't do that anymore. They just say, here's your soup, eat it. And don't ask what the hell's in it, church. And that's the problem.
You remember how when Triple H and Stephanie were running the authority nonsense into the ground? They're trying not to have that result again, but also trying to have some semblance of authority. Like, hey, we kind of need to have people. We kind of need to have something for people to just outright hate.
That is the job of the wrestlers. They got in the ring and said, "We understand. We hear you loud and clear." WWE Universe, you don't want any more authority figures. We're not going to have that anymore. Remember when they said that? The whole McMahon family was in the ring. What is this? The most hated people aren't people. Shouldn't be people who aren't going to get any payoff in the ring. It should be the people that you're paying to see in the ring. Who cares what happens to Adam Pearce? We already know he can't fight. We've already seen him, you know, I know he's a wrestler in real life, but we already know his character's not supposed to be able to be a tough guy. We've already seen him in the ring get decimated. So where is this coming from, and where's it going to go? I'll tell you what they did. They let Brock Lesnar attack him and then said, you know, that sort of made Brock look like a bad guy. I mean, Adam Pearce is just trying to be a good general manager. Maybe we better make people hate Adam Pearce so they like Brock Lesnar. It's working. Fans like Brock Lesnar because it's of Roman Reigns, though. Not because of Adam Pearce. That's why you're getting the We Want Brock chance. Roman Reigns is doing a good job. You need to put all the heat on the wrestler, not on these behind-the-scenes people. Now, Sonya Deville might step in the ring with Naomi. But what's it going to lead to? So Sonya Deville loses, and then what happens? She even mad at her? What's the end game? There isn't one. That's the problem. There's no end game to this. They're just flying by the seat of their pants. More proof on SmackDown. Absolutely no one is a bigger fan of Angel Garza than us. Okay? Absolutely no one. Friend of the show, let's hear it one time.
Hey, this is for my friends Marcus, Mike, and Todd. Thank you for voting me as the most impressive debut at Raw of this decade. Thank you. I send you a big hug. And for all those listen to WrestleChat Radio from your friend Angel Garza. And remember, el Latino está en la casa, baby.
So we were the people saying Angel Garza is the most impressive debut on Raw in a decade. This guy needs to go rocketing to the top. He's got the fans in the palm of his hands, man. He's a great wrestler, and he's very, very good at getting the fans involved. But my God, you've taken Shinsuke Nakamura, given him a belt, and said, really, even though Shinsuke has a belt, it's only to promote Rick Boogs. Shinsuke's actually promoting Rick Boogs, much like AJ is promoting Omos. Shinsuke's the one who's going to, you know, introduce the world to Rick Boogs, and he's going to be a big deal. And then you let Angel Garza beat him. I just don't know. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing. It's not that I'm not happy that Angel Garza got the win. I like Angel Garza, but here's the thing. They're a tag team. Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs is not a tag team. Shinsuke Nakamura has a solo title. And if you're going to promote Rick Boogs, he can't lose to one half of a tag team. How is that promoting Rick Boogs? So then you're wasting Shinsuke. So then you admitted you're wasting Shinsuke. You're saying, don't worry that Shinsuke doesn't really defend his belt. Don't worry that Shinsuke's not featured very much. Don't worry about it. See, we're doing this thing with Rick Boogs, and he's going to be big on promoting him, and he's going to be a future star for us. So Shinsuke's kind of opening the door for him. And then you lose to Angel Garza, who's in a tag team, and his solo career is irrelevant at this point. That does not make any sense. Todd, this was another one that just left me scratching my head.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, you have Rick Boogs lose to Angel Garza, and Rick Boogs is not a tag team guy. He's a solo singles guy. He could be like a running buddy, like watching Nakamura's back, or Nakamura watching Rick Boogs' back, but not as a tag team.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So once again, we say, okay, you've helped Angel Garza, but Angel Garza's not a guy you're looking to have a solo career at this point. I thought you were using Shinsuke Nakamura to introduce us to Rick Boogs, who was going to have a big career in it. Apparently, Mike, he can't beat anybody.
Right, and that's the thing. It doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. Just like, I'm going to go back to the whole thing with Sonya Deville. You know, the end game in that whole situation would have been, you know, having Naomi beat Sonya Deville and acknowledge Roman Reigns as the head of the table. But if you want to keep that Sonya Deville character strong, that authority figure strong, I don't like it, but if you want to keep it strong, how do you keep it strong, you know?
At this stage of the game, I just think they did it backwards. I mean, Naomi should have went in there and said, look, I'm here with all the attitude in the world. I'm here. I want an immediate title shot. I want this. I want that. And Sonya Deville should have said, look, we're really happy you're here and everything. I can't give you that. There are girls that have been here for a long time who are busting their ass. Naomi, I realize you're a former champion, but you know, you're going to have to start and work your way back up. You just got here. I can't do that. That would be favoritism. Naomi should have been the heel, and Naomi should have said, we'll see about that. And then should have been the pressure from Paul Heyman and everybody else saying, do you want Roman Reigns in the event? Because he's packing his bags. He was very offended of what you said to Naomi, and I don't think he's going to be wrestling here tonight. And that way you would have said, oh, well, who's controlling this federation? The bloodline or the authority figures? And you would have had a little bit more of a good story there that would have made sense. Then if Drew McIntyre is being kept away, you could have had the same thing. You could have had Paul Heyman come over to Adam Pearce and say, you know, if Drew McIntyre's in that Battle Royal tonight, 100% sure you're going to be counting on Roman Reigns for this match or that match. That would have made it look like the bloodline has the authority over a barrel. And the authority's not really the bad guys, but they are trying to put on a good show, and Roman Reigns is basically strong-arming them. Him and Paul Heyman are strong-arming them, much like they did the announcer, right, on SmackDown. If you can't come up with actual proof that Brock Lesnar's suspension has been lifted, you're gone. What do you mean you're gone? They're not the authority to do that. They don't have any authority to do that. So then it would have made sense, because you would have said, oh, see, the authority is so afraid of the bloodline walking or not playing ball that they're acquiescing to all of their demands. It's like the bloodline's running the Federation. Then you would have had a great uphill battle with Drew McIntyre saying this is bull. I see where this is going. You're all afraid of him. You're all afraid he's going to take his ball and go home. But if I win, he doesn't have a ball to take home. Don't you understand that if I beat him, you're free of that? You would have had a great storyline there, Church, and they mess it up.
That's because they don't know how to write their own. They haven't had any sort of decent competition television wise. Again, they haven't had anything since WCW. Haven't had any competition since WCW, but they don't know how to write their own TV.
It really seems that way. I mean, it really gets, it's at the point now. I don't even blame Vince McMahon, and I'll tell you why. I think Vince McMahon has come to an age where he simply can't do all the hands-on things he's doing, and I think he's relying more upon people who just don't understand professional wrestling. He's taken the role away from Triple H. He's taken a lot of the reins away from him. And he's put it in the hands of people who are business savvy, but not professional wrestling savvy. And so they're confusing the two. And they're not bothering to put on a product that makes any damn sense at all. And as far as Bruce Pritchard is concerned, since Bruce Pritchard was in charge of this, these shows have sucked. Now, I just listened to an interview with Dutch Mantel. And Dutch Mantel had a great mind for professional wrestling. You had him. You had Dutch Mantel on your staff. Why can't you bring him in? Why can't you bring in a guy like Scott Levy, Raven, you know? He has a great mind for the business. Get together and come up with some good storylines. But the storylines have to make sense, because if the authority is evil and they're picking on Drew McIntyre and Naomi, well, you picked on the wrong girl, because then that's what technically make the bloodline faces if they defend her. You're all over the place. You're all over the place. You don't have your storyline straight. If Shinsuke Nakamura is supposed to be building up Rick Boogs as a solo star, you can't let him lose to tag team guys. That would be the equivalent of saying we're building up Almost as a solo star, but he loses to Eric of the Viking Raiders. Well, then there goes your solo. Rick Boogs ain't going to be anybody. He just got beat by Angel Garza, who's a tag team guy, in a solo match. As much as I love Angel Garza, and I hope they're the tag team champions, because I really like this team. And I would have made Angel Garza a solo guy and gave him a huge push. He'd have been up there battling Damian Priest or Shinsuke if I was the booker. But if you're going to run with them as a tag team, fine. Then put them against tag teams. Put them against tag team wrestlers. Don't put them one-on-one with some guy that's not even in the tag team. It doesn't make any sense. You're starting a feud with two people who are not a tag team. One of them holds a singles title. Now, I want to tell you that Rhea Ripley went on record as saying the Survivor Series booking was terrible. So that goes to show you that even the people working, she said there was no rational reason. She echoed exactly what I said. There was no rational reason to leave Nikki A.S.H. out of the Survivor Series women's match when she's a former champion and was a current tag team champion. It made no sense. And she said, you know, if they were going to start a storyline between us or something, then maybe that would have made sense, but that's not what they're doing, so it really just doesn't make any sense. And the fans knew it didn't make any sense. And it's just dumb. It's dumb booking. She's absolutely right. It's completely dumb booking. Completely dumb. But once again, we're looking at a WWE that does not appear to care. I hate to say it, but that's what it looks like to me. It looks like they just don't care. So they have their battle royal. The winner is going to get a shot at Roman Reigns. And the last couple people in the ring are Jeff Hardy and Sami Zayn. Do you understand how that makes your federation look? You don't have another contender. You realize that, right? I looked around in that ring and I said, there's nobody here. There's not one guy. You got 20 guys in there, and there's not one guy that I would be remotely interested or think for 1 minute would beat Roman Reigns. Not for 1 minute. So it's an irrelevant battle royal. It doesn't matter who wins. You kept Drew McIntyre out. I don't think Drew McIntyre would win anyway, but at least if he did win, you'd say, well, you know, it is possible. They might give McIntyre, especially if Roman Reigns is hinting at wanting to leave for a while. Maybe McIntyre will take his spot for a little bit. But you know they're saving him for Lesnar. So we're sitting there, and I'm saying, well, Lesnar's going to come out and toss everybody out of the ring. I mean, that's what's going to happen because none of this makes sense. No, Sami Zayn wins. Sami Zayn wins. The same guy who hasn't beaten a single son of a bitch. And I don't know how long. I think he got one victory over Mysterio's son there. That was about it. That's it. That's all he's done. That's all he's done. And now he's going to take on Roman Reigns. Well, he's not. We know what's going to happen. Next week, he's going to take on Roman Reigns, and Brock Lesnar's going to come down and destroy Sami Zayn and probably destroy Roman Reigns. Can't make it any more obvious. Now, had Drew McIntyre won, you'd say, well, I don't know. If Roman Reigns fights Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar comes down, isn't that going to piss off McIntyre too? And he's beaten Brock Lesnar, so, and that would make Lesnar look kind of a heel. You see how they picked a heel on purpose? They picked a heel on purpose so that when Brock Lesnar destroys him, he don't look like a heel. If they pick Jeff Hardy and Brock Lesnar comes down and tears his head off, they'd say, well, I like Jeff Hardy. Brock Lesnar's an idiot. They didn't want that. They couldn't have that. So they picked the guy that everybody says, oh, good, I'm glad he gets destroyed, because that's exactly what's going to happen, Mike. And they couldn't make it any more obvious if they wrote it down on a piece of paper.
Right. And think about this. I mean, look at how AEW is handling Cody Rhodes' heel turn. All right? Just look at it and look at how the WWE has handled various different turns over the past, say, 3 or 4 years. And it's like, there's a difference. Is it any wonder that people see potential in AEW, particularly Dynamite, getting to that 1 million, maybe 1.2 million rating, whatever, and they don't see anything above a 1.8 or a 2 for SmackDown?
Yeah, listen, Mike, this is the problem with this. You're right. Let's say, and I always go to the restaurant analogy. Let's say I have a favorite pizza place. And a new pizza place moves in. And I say, well, I'm going to be loyal to the pizza place I always go to because they've always treated me right. I've always liked the pizza. And then they start lowering the quality of their pizza. And I still say, well, I still want to support them. They're still nice people. And then they start not being so nice. And the pizza's getting worse and worse. At some point, I'm going to say, okay, well, I tried, but I'm going over to the other pizzeria because their food now sucks and they're not being fair with me like they used to be. So you take someone who wants to be loyal and you step on them and you give them less than quality stuff time and time and time again. And eventually they're going to go to the competition. Eventually they're going to do that. Why wouldn't they? Because they might like one or two wrestlers over there. It's getting very hard to like anybody on Raw or SmackDown. I like Roman Reigns' storyline, and I like the whole bloodline thing. I think that's the best thing going in WWE. I like Big E as champion. I told you why, because he feels like he always is the underdog. I think he's doing a really good job. I've always liked the New Day since they actually became the New Day and not the nonsense they were doing before that when they were the New Day. But since they were this New Day, I've always said, and I will continue to say, they're going to go down in history as the greatest tag team or trio in the history of the WWE, and deservedly so, because you can't name me someone who has had that long a run and they're still on top. Try. Demolition? No. The Rockers? No. Who? Who's had that long of a run where they're always on top, and to this day, one of them's the King of the Ring and the other one's the champion? Name me one. You can't. They've been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. But aside from that, who is there to root for? Why am I even rooting for Drew McIntyre? See, I like Drew McIntyre. I think Drew McIntyre is a really good wrestler. He seems like a nice guy. I like him. You're not giving me any reason to root for any of them. Wouldn't this have been a pretty good time to maybe really promote Ridge Holland and get Ridge Holland to be the guy that fights Drew McIntyre? With Sheamus torn between, this is my old drinking buddy. This is a guy I really do love as a brother, but this is a guy who worships me and says I'm the greatest wrestler, and he got in the wrestling business because of me, and he's my, you know, he's now, I'm managing him. And my job is to make him destroy Drew McIntyre, and I'm torn. That's not a good storyline? I just don't get this. It just seems like they take these built-in storylines and it flies right over their head. Mike, there for a minute, let me go to church. Church, there's another storyline that just whoop right over their head.
Yep, they had wrestling gold, basically a license to print money, and were just like, don't need it.
It's just so annoying to watch. How easy would it have been to build that up, to have Ridge Holland beat Cesaro, to have Ridge Holland go on a tear? Finally, he's got to go up against Drew McIntyre, and Sheamus is torn between it. Could easily have went to Drew McIntyre with all the bragging in the world and said, you know, Ridge is going to really take you out and this, that, and the other thing, and he's my new guy, and you're dead meat at first. But then when Ridge Holland says, you know, I got something to prove. Drew McIntyre says he's your brother. Drew McIntyre said he was your best friend. I'm your new brother. I'm your new best friend. And I'm taking the trash out. I'm not just going to beat Drew McIntyre. I'm ending his career, Sheamus. Then Sheamus could have went to Drew seriously and said, I don't know if I can control him. He has this thing because he thinks you and I are brothers, and he seems to be jealous of it, and you know, this is a bad situation. Ridge Holland is a man very capable of crippling anybody he's in the ring with, and that includes you. What a great story. Who is Sheamus' allegiance really going to be to when the chips are down? Is it going to be to Ridge Holland, who worships him as a hero, or is it going to be to his brother, from another mother, so to speak, in Drew McIntyre? I'm into that story. Give me that story for 4 months, and I'm into it. I don't know why they ask things that you would think would be just as easy as pie, really.
Really, and that's the thing. I mean, it seems like, particularly recently, the WWE chooses not to take the easy option. And when I say the easy option, it's the option where basically the story writes itself. I mean, we've talked about many times that there have been stories that basically write themselves. You don't need to do much work in it, right?
That's exactly correct.
You know? And the WWE doesn't seem to want to take those options.
And you know how many branches on the tree you could get. So we're sitting around the production meeting saying, this is what we're going to do. Ridge Holland is going to challenge Drew McIntyre. Ridge is going to be very jealous of the relationship that Drew has with Sheamus as his so-called brother. Tell Sheamus he's going to cripple him the whole nine yards. Sheamus is a little worried that he might be able to accomplish that, and his allegiances are torn. Where do we go with it?
Well,
I don't know. We got three or four options, don't we? We go to the option that Ridge Holland is very clearly not able to do this, and Sheamus helps his new charge over his so-called brother and really betrays brother, and that's it between Sheamus and McIntyre. We have it that Drew McIntyre just wins clean. And Sheamus says, you know, you weren't ready, kid. And we move on. We have it that perhaps Sheamus turns on Ridge Holland then and goes with Drew McIntyre and says, after all, that's my brother. You know, this is just hero worship that you had. Or we have any number of things. You could even go full circle and say, well, this match went to a, they fought so many times in so many matches. They went to a draw on this one or a double count out on this one, and they're going to have a false count anywhere match. And at the end of the day, they do the same thing. Whoever beats whoever, say Drew beats Ridge Holland, finally, just barely. And instead of Ridge Holland getting up and saying F you and everything, they all hug it out and they say, maybe we're all better as a trio. And then Sheamus has two guys to manage. There's so many things you could do, and all you'd have to do is say, well, let's wait to see what fan reaction is. Let's see how the fans react to Drew. Are they really wanting Drew to kick the hell out of Ridge? Are they kind of booing Drew because they like Ridge? Let's see where this is going. And then you just judge it from there. That's a story that writes itself. Anyone who can't come up with that story does not deserve to be a writer for the WWE, because that story just wrote itself. I didn't have to sit down and think about that. It came off the top of my head because it's based on things you've already done. You've already established that those two guys are like brothers. You've already established that it was Sheamus, like you said, that gave him the sword to begin with. You've already established that Ridge Holland has some kind of hero worship with Sheamus, and he would naturally be jealous of someone that Sheamus liked better than him or was closer to, had a closer relationship than him, which would be Drew. That just writes itself. You don't have to write anything. All you have to write is the endings. And you really don't have to do that because you can let the audience kind of gauge where you want to go with that. Writing malpractice, not to have that. Absolute writing malpractice. Now, if you wanted this whole deal with Sami Zayn to happen, and he says, my documentary still hasn't come out, what happens if Sami Zayn's documentary this whole time turned out to be true? And Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, the ones we're seeing now that are clearly being unfair to Naomi and clearly being unfair to Drew McIntyre, were really being unfair to Sami Zayn. And we were all wrong. And Sami Zayn's stupid documentary actually opens that door to say, look, all the time they were doing this. They were just pretending to be nice guys and everything. They were always doing this. That would make Sami Zayn a face. Would rejuvenate his career to a certain extent, because fans would say, well, we were wrong. We were all wrong about this. He was right when he was yelling this. He wasn't a conspiracy theorist. There's a lot you could do with it. You're not even trying to do anything with any of these characters, because all you care about is, what is Roman Reigns doing? Well, I got news. He has no one to face. He has Brock Lesnar, Drew McIntyre. I know what's going to happen. I see it in the air. You're going to get to some kind of a three-way with Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and Drew McIntyre. I see it just as clear as day, because that's the only guys you got. There's nobody there who's worthy to hold. I don't want to say worthy, because they're all worthy. But I mean, the way you're booking them are worthy to be the champion, except Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar. That's it. And obviously, Roman Reigns is the champion. Aside from that, you have no contenders that are worthy of holding that belt. So let's get to some of the people who the WWE may be looking to release. And the first one that comes to mind, at least to my mind, is Elias. I mean, Elias has been going a long time. Now, they teased that they were going to do a reboot of Elias, and he was going to become a different person. but they haven't shown any of those segments in a month and a half. There's no word where he is. There's no more segments. There's no more promoting him in any way, shape, or form, saying coming soon. They haven't mentioned his name. And to be perfectly honest, it seems like he's a forgotten character. And guess what happens to those? I mean, if you can fire Karrion Kross and Keith Lee and hit Row after you barely just debuted him, I would say, Elias, you might have some trouble here. If you're Elias, you might want to be checking your phone daily, because I don't see them putting a whole bunch of effort into your rebranding. As a matter of fact, they shot like two vignettes and then they stopped totally, Church, and we haven't heard a thing about them since.
I hate to say it, but maybe if they didn't get rid of, you know, like the first half the roster before Survivor Series, they'd actually have a decent enough talent roster to be able to actually have decent feuds and make some money out of it and get some money generating off of them.
Well, but that's the thing. They don't. They had to bring in like Aaliyah. She's basically making her debut, and she's a Survivor Series team, but a former women's champion isn't. But this Elias thing, Todd, they've just stopped cold dead. We haven't heard anything about it in, what, a month and a half?
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about this Elias thing. Like you said, they were doing, like, two vignettes, and that's it. Like, they ghosted him. Like, he's ghosted. Like, you haven't seen or heard from him or they don't want him to exist anymore.
That's what it seems like, Mike. It seems like they've just turned the page on him.
They turned the page on him. And think about this. Let's compare what they've done with Elias to what they're doing with Xia Li. All right? We've seen over the last 3 or 4 weeks on SmackDown, Xia Li, you know? And yes, Making you think they're going to do something with her, right? Now, I'm not saying what they're going to do or not going to do with her. I'm just saying how they're promoting her right now, what they're doing to introduce her. And with the vignettes and the interviews and stuff like that, compare that to what they've done with the whole repackaging of Elias, and there's a market difference, you know?
Yeah, they just stopped. I mean, we saw the two vignettes, and we said, okay, something big is coming, and then nothing. Now, before we get on with some other people who may be gone from this, let me talk about Xia Li's vignettes for a minute, because these are terrible. These are not just bad. They are so bad that she stands no chance when she comes in. Now, let me tell you how close they are to being brilliant. The stories that she's telling while you're looking at it are excellent. The idea that she's some kind of superhero is awful. Whoever came up with the idea, let's do it like a comic book. You could do it like a comic book, but let's make it serious. You don't see her flying through the air going pa-pow to somebody. Do you know what Lucha Underground would have done with this? They would have actually shot real-life things with this, saying when I was a kid, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and they would have showed her actually physically beating someone or pounding a bag or kicking sparring partners or whatever. And then my brother, who's a pacifist, refused to fight these people, and I said, I'll take it upon myself to do it. They would have shown it. So that you would have said, all right, well, this person's a fighting machine. This is not going to be someone who you better take lightly. But I wouldn't be surprised at this point. She makes her debut and she's wrapped up by Dana Brooke for a three count. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Why would that surprise anyone at this point? But you can't make her a superhero either, because then she's going to get in there and you're going to be like, oh, these people are almost beating her. Well, I thought she was so brilliant. So you're going, what you need to do is have made it a little more realistic. Her stories are realistic. The depictions you're giving her stories are very unrealistic and comic bookish, and it's not doing them any service, Mike.
It really isn't. And look, she, in some of these things, they have her with a sword, right? And they do all this stuff, and they're talking about a superhero. Well, hell, who does that sound like? Remember Mulan?
Right, right, right. Yeah, I know. I don't know what to tell you about it. It's almost doomed to fail. I can see it being almost doomed to fail. But if you wanted to make her feel like not a superhero, but more of a vigilante, more of someone who like saw injustice and took it upon themselves to correct it, that's not a bad character. That you got to show it in a more realistic form. So just imagine her saying the same things and her sitting in a dojo somewhere. And you see her kicking the bags, working on martial arts equipment, using the swords or using the nunchucks, sparring and seeing like her sparring partner literally like fly over the top rope from a kick or something. And that would have been a lot better than comic book stuff. And you would have said, okay, I get it. She's sort of like this vigilante slash superhero. Not a superhero because she has no superpowers, but like a Punisher, like a female Punisher. Or the Equalizer, remember the Equalizer? Somebody like that. That's a good character. But this comic book thing ain't doing her any good, Todd. It's just making her look silly and, you know, I don't know. It seems doomed to fail to me.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with these WWE guys, people doing superhero gimmicks. Like look at Neville, formerly actually Pac, formerly as
right,
known
right.
as Neville. That gimmick he did, the superhero gimmick, worked great. The Hurricane, another one.
Well, the Hurricane
that
worked.
Great.
The reason the Hurricane worked, though, because the Hurricane was comedy. It was satire, and it worked so well. Anyone they tried to do this seriously to, it's bombed. And it's not going to work with Xia Li either. I know they figure she's not good on the microphone. This is her way of doing it. But no, a vigilante would be very silent, wouldn't they? You could have made her almost like a ninja sort of a person where, you know, something bad happens. All of a sudden, she's there in the shadows somewhere. She takes care of that person. You know, there's so much good storyline behind that because you could say, well, what happens if, okay, she's doing this and we're all cheering her because the bad guys are getting theirs. But what happens if she mistakes an opportunity? Someone does something and she doesn't know, and that person was kind of justified, but then she goes after that person. There's a lot of wiggle room you could do with that. But having cartoonish comic book persona is no good. Show her. Show her in like a dojo. Show her in actual combat. Show her kicking the bags, doing the punching, doing the kung fu stuff. Show all of that stuff so that we say, okay, well, she sounds legit. Instead of just showing comic books, it looks like it came out of a third grader's book church.
Show us what she yeah, exactly. Make her a vigilante. Make her a Lady Punisher-esque character. That way, when you do decide to pull the plug on the authority gimmick, it's, well, who do we turn to get the revenge for people? There you go.
I agree. She could have had a very interesting character because once again, if you portrayed her a little bit like the Punisher where she's doing what she thinks is right, maybe it's not always right though. You know, maybe she sees someone backstage finally getting what's coming to them, but thinks that person's in the wrong for doing it. Then what? Or someone convinces her, I'm right. I'm a good person when they're really not. They're really the heel. Then what? There's a lot you could do with this, an awful lot you could do with this. And instead, they're going to waste it. I know they're going to waste it. I already see it coming. The writing's on the wall. They're going to waste it. Now, speaking of Dana Brooke, why is she still there? I mean, at some point in time, you have to figure Dana Brooke's getting her walking papers. They've done absolutely nothing with her. Now, some of this is not WWE's fault. Dana Brooke was given a few chances, and she just didn't seem to cut it. She doesn't seem to have any personality. That was her major drawback. The best thing she ever did was when she was Titus's worldwide secretary. She was awesome. She was hilarious. She was absolutely perfect for that role. And they broke up Titus Worldwide, which, by the way, was a really, really fun group. I am so sorry to see that go. You had a golden ticket to do so much with Titus Worldwide. So much. God, the sky was the limit. Again, as somebody who is a writer, I can tell you, if you handed me that thing and said, you know, we got this Titus Worldwide thing going, you think you can write some stuff for that? I'd be like, oh, my God, what a blessing from heaven. I could write you a bazillion things for that. That's an open field ready to grow, okay, of ideas. And then you had Tozawa in there for a while. He was freaking hilarious in it. It was awesome. Those guys were so likable and so quirky and so weird. You could have kept that going for a very long time. They would have been extremely, extremely popular if they had the right writing. Problem, Todd, is they had no writing.
Well, you're absolutely right, yeah, like you said, about this Titus Worldwide thing. That was one of the best angles they did with that Tozawa, Dana Brooke, Titus O'Neil. It worked. That was one of the things that also worked, too, at that time.
It was really, really strong, and they just were never given anything much to do, Mike. It was such a shame.
And here's how big this thing could have gotten. He could have cut across all of their properties. He could have cut across, you know, SmackDown / Raw, whatever. NXT, and because of Tozawa at the time, 205 Live. He could have cut across everything. And frankly, he could have even helped, they could have probably helped make her a better option in the female division at the time. That's how much they missed out on this thing. I mean, look, when he did that whole slide thing, Titus World slide, that caught on.
Yes, it did. Mike, they could have also had such a merchandise bonanza there because they, while obviously keeping the rights to it under WWE, they could have started fake copywriting things, Titus Worldwide. In other words, he'd come up with merchandise, and while it would really be WWE copywritten, you'd have the little copyright that says Titus Worldwide, and they'd try to sell useless items, you know, things that you're like, well, I don't really need that. You know, a Titus Worldwide fidget spinner isn't really something I want, but, you know, you could have them come out with them or try to do commercials for them. There's so much. And you probably would have sold a lot of them, by the way. Just as a gag, people would have said, I got to have that because that's so funny. You know, it's a piece of right now piece of history, wrestling history. The goofiest things like that take off. Aside from that, Dana Brooke has done absolutely nothing, Church, and I don't see any reason to keep her on the payroll.
She hasn't been given a proper career. Like, think about it. You're right. If they had kept Titus Worldwide together, she'd have been able to study how to get herself over.
She would have been over because once they're over, she was over. She was even over with me. She wasn't really their secretary. What was she, their managing director? I don't know what the hell she was, but whatever she was really good at it, and it was funny to watch her. She was very good at that role, and I just thought, God, this is going to work on so many levels, and it didn't. And since then, she's done nothing. Now, a third one we need to talk about is Ricochet. You got to understand, when you're a guy like Ricochet, he's probably in his early 30s. a guy whose style of wrestling is the style he's using, they don't wrestle until their late 40s, usually. They start to go downhill at about, you know, 37, 38, and they got to start either adapting a different style, which I don't think he can do because he's not big enough, or you fold. Now, he's just got several years left of his career. They're wasting him. They're not doing anything with him. Let's face it. They give him the consolation prize all the time. It's like, well, you're going to be in the Battle Royal, and you'll be next to last, but you're still not winning. You're going to be in a tag team match, and you're going to be the guy that gets pinned, but you're still not winning. You're going to be on a Survivor Series team, and you're going to stick it out till the second or third, but you're still not winning. He's always the guy who's close but no cigar. And they're not going to do anything with him. And he knows they're not going to do anything with him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he requests his release or just doesn't re-sign. I don't think he's a guy that's necessarily they're going to let go. I think he's a guy, Mike, that is more likely he wants to go.
Right. And think about this. Think about this. They've tried the superhero gimmick several times. I mean, look, his whole Prince Puma thing in Lucha Underground, it's been several years since they folded, and probably that gimmick is in the public domain, and they could absolutely pick it up. He could be a he. Remember when he was Prince Puma, he said little to nothing, and
right.
He was a strong character, and he said little to nothing, and he was strong. They could do the same thing with him again, stick him under a mask, do the same thing again, and he'd be big at least for a short amount of time, you know, but they don't want to do
that. You're absolutely correct, Mike. And look, Lucha Underground gave us a very, very clear idea of how wrestling should actually be booked to an extent. Now, what they did was they went too far with it, but every one of their characters had a purpose, had a personality, had a gimmick that you understood what it was, you understood who they were, what their motivations were, who their friends and enemies were, where they came from, what their goals were. Everybody had that. Those vignettes that they shot were as important as the matches. Now, when it got to the ludicrous, where they were actually murdering people and stuff, then I'm done because I can't. Then it's just a movie. It's not really wrestling. But the first couple seasons, I said, they're really on to something here. I mean, they have made wrestling fun again, where these characters are fun. They're interesting. Some of them are over the top, but that's okay as long as they don't cross a line. Later they did. But while they weren't crossing the line, Mike, they were doing the writing exactly the way wrestling writing is supposed to be.
Yeah, and think about it. We know the gimmick for the whole federation. It was supposedly an underground fight club and all that stuff. So they brought in Joey Ryan as a smarmy porn-style cop, right?
Right, right.
And
a friend of mine, Ricky Reyes, as his partner, yeah. Absolutely. And they did great. You know, I talked to Reyes about it all the time. He loved Lucha Underground. He thought it was fantastic. Now, this is a guy, mind you, this is a guy who's a wrestling purist. He's not big on crazy, wild gimmicks and stuff like that. He's more of a purist of, you know, the fight is what matters, how good the ring work is what matters, not your gimmick. But he even loved it. Because he understood that when he's over there being Cortez Castro or whatever, he's got a role, too. And that role keeps what he does in the ring relevant. So we talked about that several times when Lucha Underground first started and he became a part of it. And I'm going to tell you right now that they had a good thing going and they went a little too far. By the time we got around to disappearing people and people who could vanish and people who were superhuman and all that stuff, it was really jumping the shark. Because unlike the Alexa Bliss supernatural stuff, they were taking it so far, they were showing things outside the ring that's just like, well, then you can't beat that person. If they can do that, then what are you supposed to do? Now, here's another person on the list that worries me, and that's Alexa Bliss. do not think she's untouchable. The WWE tried very hard to make Alexa Bliss this spoiled, rotten, beautiful little princess. And it worked. But she was injured very frequently. And she got concussed to the point where they kept her out of the ring for a very, very, very long time. And they weren't really too keen on letting her come back. When she did come back, she was much more careful. Her matches were very, very few and far between. And they turned her into a face character who was with Nikki Cross at the time. And they would do tag team matches, which she didn't have too much to do. Then when they did the Bray Wyatt gimmick with her whole Lily doll and all that crap, and even before the Lily doll, she barely wrestled at all. And when she did, it was mostly her dominating, and maybe she took a bump here or there, but very infrequently. Very infrequently did she take a bump. Now this whole Lily thing is probably gone. Charlotte Flair tore that up. She's on Instagram saying, I need time to heal from sinus surgery. Now, I researched sinus surgery, and they said sinus surgery could take 2 or 3 weeks after surgery for you to feel normal and heal up. 2 to 3 weeks. It's been months and months and months. So I don't know what the severity of her sinus surgery is, but I'm telling you, I researched sinus surgery, and they're saying 2 and 3 weeks. Not 2 or 3 months. And still saying I need time to heal? Now, that word heal could be a little bit of a, you know, nudge to that hurt heal thing that Wyatt did. If they are going to bring her back, though, what's the end game? If they bring her back as a spoiled little princess, she can't, but she's probably not going to be somebody who wrestles full time. And if she does, she's got to be sort of a careful and dominant. And I don't know if she can be careful and dominant at her size without that supernatural element. If they bring back the supernatural element, all that's going to do is tell fans, oh, man, I miss Wyatt and all that stuff. I wish they had not done that. I think they want to try to put that behind her. So with those two things against her, Church, it wouldn't really surprise me if in the long run they let her go.
Yeah, it's starting to look like the writing's on the wall for Alexa Bliss. As ridiculous as that sounds, because to be honest, they jumped the shark with it. They should have kept her out of a supernatural gimmick and actually made her a legitimate threat to people like Charlotte, Becky Lynch. You know, have her elevate the Divas division. Well, sorry, the women's division that much higher.
I agree. You see, at this stage, I don't know what use, other than the fact that she's popular, I don't know what use you're going to get out of Alexa Bliss, because, again, I don't think she's ready to get in the ring and do full-time 9, 10, 12-minute matches. I don't think they want to go with that supernatural thing anymore. I'm not sure that they want to do it. I don't know what they want to do with her. I don't think – and here's another thing. I don't think they think somebody else will pick her up. I think they think, based on her concussion history and her history of injuries, other federations would be very, very slow to jump on her, Mike. So she could be next up in line.
She could be next up in line. But then again, I think of it like this. She's another one that if the right federation got a hold to her, you know, she could be big for them, you know. I mean, she's only 30, right? Yeah, she's had her problems with her concussions, but if she can convince somebody else that that she can stay healthy, then they're going to pick her up, and she's got the personality. She's got an attitude about herself that somebody, I think when they let her go, there are going to be people that are going to take a serious look at her and pick her up.
Well, I know she's been among the more popular of the female performers until they ruined her, inexplicably ruined her by separating her from Bray Wyatt, which was a mistake. on the whole Bray Wyatt firing, which was a mistake. But, you know, again, with her history of injuries and her not really being able to do full-time in the ring work, and this sinus surgery thing seemingly way too long recovery, something doesn't seem right. Something doesn't seem right about that just being a simple sinus surgery. I hope not, Todd, because I really do like her, but I think she's also possibly on the chopping block.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we haven't, ever since she had a sinus surgery, she haven't been on, haven't been doing any vignettes, haven't made any appearances. Well, like you said, I got that feeling too. She's going, I hope she don't get on that chopping block to get released from the WWE.
Another one we have to talk about is Asuka. They've not mentioned her name. They've literally not mentioned her name. And if they're bringing in another Asian superstar to kind of be the big face, you would think that if they brought back Asuka, she might be a heel. But I don't know how you're going to work that out. Now, they did draft her, I guess. So it makes it look like, perhaps, because Elias is not even drafted. If you go to look on the WWE of who got drafted to what brand, Elias ain't on any of them. Asuka is. You would think they would want to maybe feud her with Xia Li, but then she'd have to be a heel. And I'm not so sure, given Xia Li's personality and Asuka's personality, that people would root for Xia Li. So I'm not 100% sure if Asuka's job is even safe. I would hope so, since she's one of the top people in the sport. See, what keeps Asuka possibly safer than the rest is because they realize that someone will pick her up. And she will instantly be their top person. And it will make them look like complete buffoons. So they probably will hang on to her. But how about Bobby Roode? How long has it been? Okay, he's been a tag team champion with the Dirty Dogs. But come on, this is an NXT champion. He was arguably one of your most popular guys in NXT. And since he's come over here, it's been nothing. I mean, he has been underwhelming to a point where it's almost irrelevancy. And he is not a young man. So if they're looking toward the future, it's not Bobby Roode. So I would have to think, Mike, that Bobby Roode is likely on the chopping block in the near future.
Right. And look, he has a long history of being, maybe not in the WWE, but he has a long history of being at least one of a particular company's top guys. I mean, for how long was he a top guy with Impact? You know? I mean, think about it. And you're right about Asuka. She's like Nakamura. She could go back to Japan today.
Yep.
And go back and fall back into what she was doing in Japan and be a great, you know, wrestler in Japan. But it's likely that, you know what, if Asuka got cut, I wouldn't mind seeing an Asuka Riho match.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I mean. There's options for Asuka. The WWE sometimes, I think, goes by who has the most options if we release them. If they don't have that many options, like, for instance, nobody jumped on Braun Strowman right away, right? They must have known for some reason people wasn't going to jump on him. There was a few people that nobody jumped on right away that I think they thought was going to get jumped on. Or those people, when they got released, thought, I'm going to get jumped on instantly, and they really didn't. So there might be a little bit of that to it, too. Bobby Roode would be a good fit in certain places, but he's no spring chicken, and you know, how long are you going to wrestle for? So, again, he's somebody who's on the chopping block. I think KO, who's said he's not even sure he's going to re-sign his contract, is on the chopping block. Now, I should say, Johnny Gargano from NXT, and we'll talk about NXT guys in a second here, Johnny Gargano from NXT signed a week extension on his contract so he could finish up this feud he's doing. Just a week. Now, they're hoping to sign him within that week. But if you just sign a week extension and don't just go ahead and sign your full contract, Church, that sounds like you don't intend to be there after that week. I think we lost Church. Let me go back to Mike. Mike, if you sign a week's extension, isn't that kind of saying, yeah, that's about the best you're going to get from me?
Yeah, and think about this. If he's signing a week extension, what does that say is going to happen when his wife's contract comes up?
Yeah, and guess what? The WWE has threatened to elongate that contract because of her pregnancy, meaning she has a certain amount of time left, and they're going to say, well, you can take the time off from your pregnancy. We're putting it on the end of your contract. So she's going to have a much longer time to go. So Gargano's going to have to consider that, too. He's going to have to consider, are they going to take this out on my wife if I leave? I don't want to tell you about that. As far as NXT 2.0 is going, can you believe that the WWE is sending out? They used to do this, by the way. I told you on live shows, sometimes they would hand me things and ask me questions. Guys would come over with clipboards and ask questions. Well, they're doing that now with NXT 2.0. Do you think the action in the ring is above average, average, below average? Do you like the characters? Who are your favorite characters? Do you like more characterization, less characterization? Do you feel this is good, that's good? They're really, really lost over in NXT 2.0. They're lost. They realized that the reboot was just a disaster, an absolute abject disaster. And now they're scrambling to find out, well, what do you want? Well, it wasn't broke. No, you weren't getting a million people viewing it. You did need to tweak it. You did need to add more characters. But you didn't need to go full-fledged the other way either. See, you jumped the shark in both directions, when really all you had to do was meet in the middle and say, we got to have a good cross between the exact action that these fans love and are loyal to, but add some more characterization, add some more plot lines, add some more, you know, gimmicks to it. Not just forget the action, let's go straight gimmick. They didn't want that either. So, I don't know, man. NXT's been kind of poor lately, and I think they realize this is a losing effort in the rebooting.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. You're absolutely right there with the NXT thing. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I like it the way it was, technically.
I liked it the way it was, too. They could have added some more characters. They could have added some more unique personalities. I'll give them that. They did need to expand on that because they didn't have anybody over there that was really drawing. They didn't have anybody over there was, you know, they had Finn Balor as a champion for a while. Karrion Kross, they took over and then they fired. They didn't have anybody. Adam Cole left. So there was an awful lot of open space for people that drew. Velveteen Dream, they let go because of his issues. So they needed charisma. They definitely needed an injection of charisma. But they didn't have to go this far. So at this stage, I don't know what to say about NXT. It's definitely not what people want. I've not heard too many people say, I love the new NXT. I've heard just the opposite. I've heard, oh, man, they took a good thing and kind of just ruined it. And I'm thinking, Mike, they went too far with it.
Yeah, I think they went too far with it as well. Yeah, it may not have been getting the ratings, but still, it was getting a rating. It was getting an all right rating, you know, about 650,000-700,000. But this one has probably dropped the ratings back to 500,000. So it's gotten worse, not better. And I mean, they may have not liked Triple H being in charge, but at least when he was in charge, he was sort of kind of a steadying force there, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, he was. He definitely kept things a little bit under control. This is now the inmates are running the asylum. Now, this is another guy we got to talk about that could be leaving, and that's Finn Balor. I mean, Finn Balor was their first brand split champion, right? And then he got injured. After he got injured and he came back, they weren't using him well. When he became like the demon, they used him well. But aside from that, they weren't using him that well. And then they sent him down to NXT, even though he's – I don't think he's a very charismatic guy. Apparently, some people do. I don't. But they were using him well. He became the champion. He wasn't drawing. He didn't draw any more eyes to the product, but he certainly was their top guy. He certainly was their top guy. They bring him back. They give him this big feud with Roman Reigns. And past that, not one damn thing. He's losing every match he's in. And I'm gathering that the WWE doesn't have much for him. And I don't know if they really even care if Finn Balor goes somewhere else. I mean, at some point you have to say, how many people can they squeeze into an AEW locker room? How many egos can you squeeze in there? You know, you got a ton of guys saying, I want TV time, and you only got so much TV time. So I don't know if they're even afraid of losing Finn Balor at this point, Church, but he's another guy I think could potentially be on the chopping block. Once again, I don't think we got Church there. Todd, what about the Finn Balor thing? You think he's on the chopping block possibly?
Hey, by the looks of it, they're making them have him lose matches week after week after week ever since he came back up on the main roster. And, you know, like you said, Mike, everybody on this panel, I'm not really too keen on Finn Balor here.
No, I mean, listen, I know he's a great athlete. I'm not blind. I just don't think he's a tremendously charismatic guy or that he really makes people care about the wins and the losses, Mike.
Right, and look, it would, if they keep him, it would make all the sense in the world if they would put him and AJ and Nakamura together, sort of a Bullet Club type situation. But they're not going to do it.
Nope.
But it would make sense, right?
It would, yeah. It absolutely would. Anyway, those are the guys who are basically, on the chopping block, and there could be more. I mean, Sami Zayn is one that definitely could be. Dolph Ziggler's been around forever. They're not going to do much with him. He could be. There's any number of people that could be. Shelton Benjamin. Tozawa. There's a lot of them that could potentially be on the chopping block. Now, someone who's not on the chopping block and has gotten the pat on the back from, of all people, The Undertaker is Omos. The Undertaker literally said, we will never have another Andre the Giant, but Omos is as close as you're going to get. And if he's handled properly, he could be huge, huge name in this business. To which Omos replied, wow, I have no words except thank you to The Undertaker. And The Undertaker has hinted that he has been giving Omos some advice on what he shouldn't sell, what he should sell, how he should react to certain things, sort of giving him maybe more advice even than AJ Styles on how to be a big guy, and because Styles can't give you that advice, how to be a big guy and make sure you're selling so you don't look like you're unwilling to sell to people, but you're not hurting your career by doing it, by just making sure you sell to a certain extent. And so far, I have to admit, Mike, almost has mirrored that tremendously, where it looks like he's almost invincible.
Right, and think about this. The last guy that The Undertaker helped out was who? The last guy that he helped out kind of like this was who? The Rock.
Yes, The Rock is one, yep.
Yep, and what happened with The Rock? Rock went on, and now he's one of the biggest Hollywood stars in the world. Say that almost is going to be that type of guy. But if he's getting help from The Undertaker, then, and Vince knows about it, and so does Pritchard, then almost is not going nowhere near anytime soon. In fact, once they break him up from AJ, he's going to get a major, major push thanks to The Undertaker. you know. And
well, I'll tell you this, if I were breaking into the sport and you told me the two guys I'm going to have coach you and help you are AJ Styles and The Undertaker, well, I got news. Then they must think a whole lot of you because they've just given you, Mike, two of the very, very best in the business as your coaches, so to speak.
Right, and that's the thing. And one other person to watch with these cuts is Io Shirai because she's not a spring chicken in terms of what they want in NXT. And she's been there a while, and she's basically done everything, and they still refuse to bring her up. And so that's another person to watch in terms of cuts by the WWE. If they would bring her up, then I would say, yeah, they're going to go ahead and cut Asuka if they would bring Io Shirai up.
Yeah, I know. No one is safe. See, this is where the real problem is in the WWE. We don't even know. We can't even really say who's safe and who isn't at this stage of the game. And that's pretty sad. And if we can't say it, probably they can't say it. I can name you a handful of people that isn't going anywhere anytime soon. That's just a small handful. The vast majority, I'd say over 65% of the locker room, probably doesn't know if they're employed tomorrow. How would you feel? How would you feel? That's not good. I'm telling you, it's not good for morale. And this is the problem that the WWE has, I think. And it's going to continue. But the second problem that they have is that it is really making the fans lose their loyalty. It's making the fans say, well, look, I tried my best. I defended you guys when you did this. I defended you guys when you did that. But at this stage of the game, if you're just going to continue to do this nonsense and then blame it on us for the most part and say, oh, the fans are so fickle, they don't know what they want, and we can't listen to all that. Well, at some point, I'm telling you, if you keep doing that, if you keep biting the hand that feeds you, they are going to go to the Federation who, whether they're doing it or not, and I could argue whether they are or not, but whether they're doing it or not, they're saying the right thing. They're saying, oh, the fans is the only reason we're doing this. This is all for the fans. This is, you know, we listen to the fans over here. Well, at least they're saying the right thing. They don't have their wrestlers on Instagram saying, oh, you fans, you're never happy. Oh, you fans, you're all idiots. It's not a good look. It's not a good look. One of the other things we want to comment on is the audio come out on the attack on Seth Rollins. And I got to tell you, I'm very, very impressed. I continue to be very impressed with how Seth Rollins handled this. Because while we heard him screaming at the guy, and he did say something like, that's all you got, which was kind of dumb. But most of it, he said, what's wrong with you, dude? What's your problem? He wasn't even like necessarily all that upset at him. He wasn't screaming anything that would have been, you know, too bad, or he didn't really even break character all that much. It was really an eye-opening thing. And in a weird way, and let me tell you, if you're listening to my voice, do not jump the barricade. Do not attack a wrestler. It's not going to end well. It's not going to end well. Because if they don't get you, the law's going to get you. And by the time the law's finished with you, you'll wish the wrestler got you. But having said that, in a weird way, this could potentially help Seth Rollins' career. Because if I'm in the hierarchy of the WWE, and this happens to one of my athletes, and they handle it with that kind of poise and that kind of perfect demeanor, even when addressing the press later and shifting the focus away from the guy when they ask him, oh, you were attacked, you know, how? And he says, look, that was really scary, dude. You know, security did a good job. Everything is great. I hope everyone is okay. He never had anything bad to say about the guy. He didn't say some miserable SOB. You know, there's a lot of things he could have done. He didn't do any of those. He handled it with what we used to call aplomb, okay? He handled it perfectly, like a professional should. And that's eye-opening. That's eye-opening to people in the front office who says, whoa, under those circumstances, how many people handle it that well? And the answer is a handful, a small handful. And that's got to make his worth in this company even bigger than it already was, Mike, because that's somebody you know you can count on in pressure situations.
Right, and think about this. Look. We've talked. This is an out of the ring situation. There was a time for a good 8 months to a year that he was carrying this thing, this company on his shoulders, kind of the way that Roman Reigns is right now, and they couldn't ill afford to lose him. And we've talked about that before. And because of this situation, this poise that he showed, there's a chance that even if Roman Reigns leaves, they could say, all right, Seth Rollins, you're still here. We're going to put this thing back on your shoulders again.
And I still think they could. I still think they could do that. I still think Seth Rollins is still a viable option to be the top guy. I still think he is. Because he puts on a good match. You know you can count on him for that. He's good on the mic. He still has the fan base. He hasn't really... They've cycled him down, but he's still popular. They cycled him down a bit, and now they're starting to kind of cycle him back up. And it'll be very interesting to see where they go from here. Aside from that, however, I'm being dead serious when I say the following. The WWE looks like a company in trouble. I'm seeing sloppiness that they never used to have. I'm seeing a lack of caring about angles. I'm seeing them literally stop pushes right in the middle of a push and just forget about it. I've seen them stop building people with vignettes and things and just forget about it. I've seen them fire people who they just introduced as main eventers. I see them letting go staff. I see them padding television time with ridiculous things. And I say to myself, this does not look like a company who really gives one damn right now. And that makes me feel that they may be just treading water until a deal is done, that they may, in fact, be selling this company. And I can tell you that if this company is, in fact, taken over by another entity, and Vince McMahon really doesn't have a lot to do with it, and most of his people don't, some people would say, you're going to see a better product. I think you may actually see the end. Because then there really is no loyalty. Then fans would say, it's not even, you know, Vince gave me so much entertainment over the years, I'm sort of loyal to him in a way. I'm loyal to Triple H. If those guys are out of it, people are going to say, I don't give a freaking flying dump about this new company. They can call themselves the WWE all they want. They're not. They're this broadcasting network, or they're Disney, or they're Peacock, whatever they happen to be. And then you might see the big shift to AEW. I can't, if you ask me right now as a wrestling fan, and I'm a lifelong WWE fan, and I'm not a huge AEW fan, but if you ask me right now as a new fan, I want to get into wrestling as far as a fan base is concerned. What federation should I watch? I'm going to tell you AEW. That's what I'm going to tell you to do. Because I think if you watch AEW, you have a more likely chance of becoming a long-term wrestling fan than you do if you watch what WWE is throwing out there now because it's garbage. You know, if you've never watched wrestling before, and I recommend you WWE, and you watch the horror show that was Raw or SmackDown this week, you're going to be like, oh, that's terrible. I have no interest in this. Now, if you watched AEW, you might say, oh, well, you know, there's some cool stuff on here I'd like to see. So as much as it may surprise people, Mike, I would have to say AEW at this point to a new fan just trying to, you know, break into watching wrestling.
And look, that's even above the fact that
we don't particularly care when Tony Khan gets in front of a microphone, you know, with all his bluster. But right now, you're looking at it, and people may be looking at it as just that, just him just blowing smoke, just blustering, you know. And that's a good thing. If you're getting that type of response when a guy is saying some off-the-wall, outlandish things on the mic that owns the company, but you're still getting growth, somewhat of a growth out of it, then it's a good thing, and you're right. I mean, what's going to happen if, you know, they're talking about Disney, they're talking about Peacock, whatever, whomever it is. I mean, Disney owns Fox, right? They bought Fox. They bought the Fox network, you know, the television network. That's one of the things. But NBC Universal is USA. So it could come down to the fact that you've got two companies that have the television contracts that are going to be bidding against each other.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that the WWE likes. And you got to realize Vince McMahon's getting older. And I think Vince McMahon originally thought my legacy will be handed down to my children. But I don't necessarily know if – I don't know if Stephanie even wants it. And I'm pretty sure that Shane doesn't. And that only leaves Triple H. And I don't think he feels that he wants to leave it that way. I just got this weird feeling lately that things have shifted because, you know, first he demoted Triple H and they said, it's not a demotion, it's just a change of position. No, it was a demotion. He got kind of taken out of a lot of the creative things. He was to the point where he said, I didn't even know they fired Samoa Joe. Nobody told me. He's another guy to watch, by the way. He's hurt a lot and he may be on the chopping block again. But he didn't even tell him. Didn't even tell him about Keith Lee because Keith Lee said I had talks with Triple H about maybe coming back to NXT. Aleister Black said the same thing. And then boom, gone. And nobody even consulted Triple H. So, I mean, you think he's the guy that Vince McMahon's putting in charge when he's not even keeping him in the loop? That doesn't sound right. So, yeah, I don't know, man. At this stage, this is one of the toughest periods of time I've seen the WWE go through. They seem unsure of themselves. They seem kind of lost. They seem to be struggling for their own identity. And they seem, worse of all of that, to not really care a lot. Can't have that. Fans pick up on it, and we are picking up on it. Anyway, we'll see what happens Monday night. Thanks to Mike, Todd, and Church for joining me. Thanks to you guys for joining me. We'll see you on Tuesday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.